All day blue burrows the atmosphere. What doesn't belong with you won't be seen. You could build a world out of need, or you could hold everything black and see. You give back the lack. You hold everything black. You give yourself back until nothing's left but the dissolving blues of metaphor. Sometimes, I is supposed to hold what is not there until it is. Then what is comes apart, the closer you are to it. This makes the first person a symbol for something, the pronoun barely holding the person together. Someone claimed we should use our skin as wallpaper, knowing we couldn't win. You said, I has so much power, it's insane. And you would look past me, all gloved up in a big coat, with fancy fur around the collar, and record a self saying, you should be scared. The first person can't pull you together. Shit, you were reading minds, but did you try? Tried rhyme, tried truth, tried epistolary untruth, tried and tried. You really did. Everyone understood you to be suffering, and still everyone thought you were the sun. Never mind our unlikeness. You too have heard the noise in your voice. Anyway, sit down. Sit here alongside. Exactly why we survive and can look back with furrowed brow is beyond me. It is not something to know. Your ill-spirited, cooked, hell on Main Street, nobody's here, broken-down first person could be one of many definitions of being to pass on. The past is a life sentence, a blunt instrument aimed at tomorrow. Drag that first person out of the social death of history, then we're kin. Kin calling out the past like a foreigner with a newly minted, fuck you. Maybe you don't agree. Maybe you don't think so. Maybe you are right. You don't really have anything to confess. Why are you standing? Listen, you, I was creating a life study of a monumental first person, a Brahmin first person. If you need to feel that way, still you are in here and here is nowhere. Join me down here and nowhere. Don't lean against the wallpaper. Sit down and pull together. Yours is a strange dream, a strange reverie. No, it's a strange beach. Each body is a strange beach. And if you let in the excess emotion, you will recall the Atlantic Ocean breaking on our heads. Yesterday called to say we were together, and you were bloodshot, and again the day carried you across a field of hours deep into dawn, back to now, where you are thankful for what faces you, the storm. This day's sigh as the day shifts its leaves, the wind a prompt against the calm you can't digest. Blue ceiling calling a body into the midst of azure, oceanic, as ocean blushes the blues it can't absorb, reflecting back a day. A day phrase, night, not night. This fright passes through the eye, crashing into you. Is this you? Yes, it's me. Clear the way, then hold me clear of this that faces, the storm carrying me through dawn, not knowing whether to climb down or up into its eye. Day, hearing a breath shiver, whose are you? Guardrail, spotlight, safety lock, airbag, fire lane, slip guard, night watch. Far into this day are the days this day was meant to take out of its way. An obstacle to surrender, dusk in dawn, held open, then closing, then opening. A red-tailed hawk, dusk at dawn, taking over blue, surveying movement against the calm red sky at morning. Whose are you? In line at the drugstore, it's finally your turn, and then it's not, as he walks in front of you and puts his things on the counter. The cashier says, sir, she was next. When he turns to you, he is truly surprised. Oh my God, I didn't see you. You must be in a hurry, you offer. No, 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 I really didn't see you. You wait at the bar of the restaurant for a friend, and a man, wanting to make conversation, nursing something, takes out his phone to show you a picture of his wife. You say, bridge that she is beautiful. She is, he says. Beautiful and black, like you. Leaving the day to itself, you close the door behind you and pour a bowl of cereal, then another, and would a third if you didn't interrupt yourself with the statement, "You aren't hungry." Appetite won't attach you to anything, no matter how depleted you feel. It's true. You lean against the sink, a glass of red wine in your hand, and then another, thinking in the morning you will go to the gym, having slept and slept beyond the residuals of all yesterdays. Yes, and you do go to the gym, and run in place, an entire hour running, just you and your body running off each undesired, desired encounter. 6. August 29th, 2005. Hurricane Katrina. Script for situation video comprised of quotes collected from CNN, created in collaboration with John Lucas. Hours later, still in the difficulty of what is to be, just like that, inside it, standing there, maybe waiting, maybe waving, standing where the deep waters of everything backed up, one said. Climbing over bodies, one said. Stranded on a roof, one said. Trapped in the building. And in the difficulty, nobody coming, and still someone saying, who could see it coming? The difficulty of that. The fiction of the facts assumes innocence, ignorance, lack of intention, misdirection. The necessary conditions of a certain time and place. Have you seen their faces? Faith, not fear, she said. She'd heard that once and was trying to stamp the phrase on her mind. At the time, she couldn't speak it aloud. He wouldn't tolerate it. He was angry. Where were they? Where was anyone? This is a goddamn emergency, he said. Then someone else said it was the classic binary between the rich and the poor, between the haves and the have-nots, between the whites and the blacks, in the difficulty of all that. Then each house was a mumbling structure. All that water, buildings peeling apart, the yellow foam, the contaminated drawl of mildew, mold. The missing limbs, he said, the bodies lodged in piles of rubble, dangling from rafters, lying face down, arms outstretched on parlor floors. And someone said, where were the buses? And simultaneously someone else said, FEMA said it wasn't safe to be there. What I'm hearing, she said, which is sort of scary, is they all want to stay in Texas. He gave me the flashlight, she said. I didn't want to turn it on. It was all black. I didn't want to shine a light on that. We never reached out to anyone to tell our story, because there's no ending to our story, he said. Being honest with you, in my opinion, they forgot about us. It's awful, she said, to go back home to find your own dead child. It's really sad. And so many of the people in the arena here, you know, she said, were underprivileged anyway, so this is working very well for them. You simply get chills every time you see these poor individuals. So many of these people, almost all of them that we see, are so poor, someone else said, and they are so black. Have you seen their faces? Then this aestheticized distancing from, oh my God, from unbelievable, from dehydration, from overheating, from no electricity, no power, no way to communicate. We are drowning here, still in the difficulty. As if the faces and the images hold all the consequences, and the fiction of the facts assumes randomness and indeterminacy. He said, I don't know what the water wanted. It wanted to show you no one would come. He said, I don't know what the water wanted. As if then and now were not the same moment. He said, I don't know what the water wanted. Call out to them. I don't see them. Call out anyway. Did you see their faces? February 26th, 2012. In memory of Trayvon Martin. Script for situation video created in collaboration with John Lucas. My brothers are notorious. They have not been to prison. They have been imprisoned. The prison is not a place you enter. It is no place. My brothers are notorious. They do regular things, like wait. On my birthday, they say my name. They will never forget that we are named. What is that memory? The days of our childhood together were steep steps into a collapsing mind. It looked like we rescued ourselves, were rescued. Then there are these days, each day of our adult lives. They will never forget our way through, these brothers. Each brother, my dearest brothers, dear heart. Your hearts are broken. This is not a secret, though there are secrets. And as yet I do not understand how my own sorrow has turned into my brothers' hearts. The hearts of my brothers are broken. If I knew another way to be, I would call up a brother. I would hear myself saying, my brother, my dearest brothers, dear heart. On the tip of a tongue, one note following another is another path, another dawn where the pink sky is the bloodshot of struck, of sleepless, of sorry, of senseless, shush. Those years of and before me and my brothers, the years of passage, plantation, migration, of Jim Crow segregation, of poverty, inner cities, profiling, of one in three, two jobs, boy, hey boy, each a felony, accumulate into the hours inside our lives where we are all caught hanging, the rope inside us, the tree inside us, its roots our limbs, a throat sliced through, and when we open our mouth to speak, blossoms, oh blossoms, no place coming out, brother, dear brother, that kind of blue. The sky is the silence of brothers all the days leading up to my call. If I called, I'd say goodbye before I broke the goodbye. I say goodbye before anyone can hang up. Don't hang up. My brother hangs up, though he is there. I keep talking. The talk keeps him there. The sky is blue, kind of blue. The day is hot. Is it cold? Are you cold? It does get cool. Is it cool? Are you cool? My brother is completed by sky. The sky is his silence. Eventually, he says, it is raining. It is raining down. It was raining. It stopped raining. It is raining down. He won't hang up. He's there. He's there, but he's hung up, though he is there. Goodbye, I say. I break the goodbye. I say goodbye before anyone can hang up. Don't hang up. Wait with me. Wait with me, though the waiting might be the call of goodbyes. June 26, 2011. In memory of James Craig Anderson. Script for Situation Video, created in collaboration with John Lucas. In the next frame, the pickup truck is in motion. Its motion activates its darkness. The pickup truck is a condition of darkness in motion. It makes a dark subject. You mean a black subject? No, a black object. Then the pickup is beating the black object to the ground and the tire marks the crushed organs. Then the audio, I ran that nigger over, is itself a record-breaking hot June day in the 21st century. The pickup returns us to live cruelty, like sunrise, red streaks falling from dawn to asphalt. Then again, this pickup is not about beauty. It's a pure product. The announcer patronizes the pickup truck. No hoodlums, just teens, no gang. Just a teen, with straggly blonde hair, a slight blonde man. The pickup is human in this predictable way. Do you recognize yourself, Deadman? In the circulating photo, you are looking down. Were you dreaming of this day all the days of your youth? In the daydream, did the pickup take you home? Was it a pickup fueling the road to, I ran that nigger over? Baldwin says skin color cannot be more important than the human being. And was the pickup constructing or exploding whiteness out of you? You are so sorry. You are angry, an explosive anger, an effective one. I ran that nigger over. James Craig Anderson is dead. The pickup truck is a figure of speech. It is as the crown standing in for the kingdom. Who told you it was a crown? Did we tell you the pickup was as good as home? You are so young, Deadman. You were so young. James Craig Anderson is dead. What ails you, Deadman?
What up?
What's up is James Craig Anderson is dead. So sorry. So angry, an imploding anger. It must let you go. It let you go. December 4th, 2006. Gina 6. Script for Situation Video, created in collaboration with John Lucas. As he walked across grass still green from summer, walking out of the rain, a step beyond into a piece of sky dry all day for him. In this moment, a shelter as he sat beneath the overhanging branches of the white tree, surprising himself at the center of the schoolyard, thinking of the slight give in the cushions of the counter seats he had read about in textbooks. Did the hardness of the ground cross the hardness of the seats in buses as he waited to be noticed, listening to the lift and fall of the leaves above him? As the boys walked across grass, a darkening wave, as dusk folded into night, walking toward a dawn sun punching through the blackness as they noosed the rope looped around the overhanging branches of their tree, surprising themselves at the center of the schoolyard, thinking this is how they will learn the ropes. Did the hardness in the history books cross the hardness in their eyes, all the eyes with that look without give? Did they give that look to the lift and fall of the leaves above them? At the high school party, the boy turned to the boys as boys do, walking into a fist, punching through the blackness as glass-shattered light knocked conscious, blunt breathing, bruising the refusing boy surrounded by blows taking custody of his body, bodying forth against a boyhood, defining it by fighting through this body, propelled forward and back, bearing until the beer bottle shattered hardness, bruising the refusal leveled without give. When the boys turned the corner, was inflammation in the air already forming knuckles as they pummeled the body being kicked and beaten until knocked unconscious, his right eye closed shut, blood refusing to clot flowing from both ears? Were they hearing their own breathing, their own ears allowing their blows to take custody of this body, fallen against the hardness of the concrete floor, leveled without give? Boys will be boys being boys, feeling their capacity, heaving budding heads, righting their wrongs in the violence of aggravated adolescence, charging forward in their way, experiencing the position of positioning, which is a position for only one kind of boy. Face it, know it. For the other boy, for the other boys, the fists, the feet criminalized already or weapons already exploding the landscape. And then the litigious hitting back is life imprisoned. Stop and Frisk. Script for Situation Video, created in collaboration with John Lucas. I knew whatever was in front of me was happening, and then the police vehicle came to a screeching halt in front of me like they were setting up a blockade. Everywhere were flashes, a siren sounding, and a stretched-out roar.
Get on the ground! Get on the ground now!
Then I just knew. And you are not the guy, and still you fit the description, because there is only one guy who is always the guy fitting the description. I left my client's house knowing I would be pulled over. I knew, I just knew. I opened my briefcase on the passenger seat, just so they could see. Yes, officer, rolled around on my tongue, which grew out of a bell that could never ring because its emergency was a tolling I was meant to swallow. In a landscape drawn from an ocean bed, you can't drive yourself sane. So angry you are crying, you can't drive yourself sane. This motion wears a guy out. Our motion is wearing you out, and still you are not that guy. Then flashes, a siren, a stretched-out roar, and you are not the guy, and still you fit the description, because there is only one guy who is always the guy fitting the description.
Get on the ground! Get on the ground now!
I must have been speeding.
No, you weren't speeding.
I wasn't speeding?
You didn't do anything wrong.
Then why are you pulling me over? Why am I pulled over?
Put your hands where they can be seen. Put your hands in the air. Put your hands up.
Then you are stretched out on the hood, then cuffed.
Get on the ground, now.
Each time, it begins in the same way. It doesn't begin the same way. Each time it begins, it's the same. Flashes, a siren, the stretched-out roar. Maybe because home was a hood the officer could not afford. Not that a reason was needed. I was pulled out of my vehicle a block from my door, handcuffed and pushed into the police vehicle's back seat, the officer's knee pressing into my collarbone, the officer's warm breath vacating a face creased into the smile of its own private joke. Each time, it begins in the same way. It doesn't begin the same way. Each time it begins, it's the same.
Go ahead, hit me, motherfucker,
fled my lips, and the officer did not need to hit me. The officer did not need anything from me, except the look on my face on the drive across town. You can't drive yourself sane. You are not insane. Our emotion is wearing you out. You are not the guy. This is what it looks like. You know this is wrong. This is not what it looks like.
You need to be quiet.
This is wrong.
You need to close your mouth now.
This is what it looks like.
Why are you talking if you haven't done anything wrong?
And you are not the guy, and still you fit the description, because there is only one guy who is always the guy fitting the description. In a landscape drawn from an ocean bed, you can't drive yourself sane. So angry, you can't drive yourself sane. The charge the officer decided on was exhibition of speed. I was told, after the fingerprinting, to stand naked. I stood naked. It was only then I was instructed to dress, to leave, to walk all those miles back home. And still, you are not the guy, and still you fit the description, because there is only one guy who is always the guy fitting the description. And yes, the inaudible spreads across state lines, its call backing away from the face of America. Bloodshot eyes calling on America that can't look forward for being called back. America turned loose on America. All living is listening for a throat to open, the length of its silence shaping lives. When he opened his mouth to speak, his speech was what was written in the silence, the length of the silence becoming a living. And what had been, "I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States," becomes, "I do solemnly swear that I will execute the office of President to the United States faithfully." August 4th, 2011. In memory of Mark Duggan. Though this house in London has been remodeled, the stairs, despite being carpeted, creak. What was imagined as a silent retreat from the party seems to sound through the house. By the fifth step, you decide to sit down, and on the wall next to you is a torn passport photo of half a woman's face, blown up and framed as art. "Where did you imagine you were going?" you say aloud to her. "The purpose of art," James Baldwin wrote, "is to lay bare the questions hidden by the answers." He might have been channeling Dostoevsky's statement that we have all the answers, it is the questions we do not know. "Where can I imagine you have been?" A man, a novelist with the face of the English sky, full of weather, always in response, constantly shifting, clouding over only to clear briefly, stands before you, his head leaning against the same wall as the torn-up girl. You begin discussing the recent riots in Hackney. Despite what is being said, you get lost in his face, his responsiveness bringing what reads as intimacy to his eyes. He says the riots were similar to the Rodney King L.A. riots. However, he feels the UK media handled them very differently from the U.S. media. The Hackney riots began at the end of the summer of 2011, when Mark Duggan, A black man, a husband, a father, and a suspected drug dealer, was shot dead by officers from Scotland Yard's Operation Trident, a special operations unit addressing gun crime in black communities. As the rioting and looting continued, government officials labeled the violent outbreak opportunism and sheer criminality, and the media picked up this language. Whatever the reason for the riots, images of the looters' continued rampage eventually displaced the fact that an unarmed man was shot to death. In the United States, Rodney King's beating, caught on video, trumped all other images. If there had been a video of Duggan being executed, there might be less ambiguity around what started the riots, you hazard to say. Will you write about Duggan? The man wants to know. Why don't you? You ask. Me? He asks, looking slightly irritated. How difficult is it for one body to feel the injustice wielded at another? Are the tensions, the recognitions, the disappointments, and the failures that exploded in the riots too foreign? A similar accumulation and release drove many Americans to respond to the Rodney King beating. Before it had happened and happened. As a black body in the States, your response was necessary if you were to hold on to the fiction that this was an event wrongfully ordinary, therefore a snafu within the ordinary. Though the moment had occurred and occurred again with the deaths, beatings, and imprisonment of other random unarmed black men, Rodney King's beating somehow cut off the air supply in the U.S. body politic by virtue of the excessive, blatant barrage of racism and compromised justice that followed on the heels of his beating. And though in this man's body, the man made of English sky, grief exists for Duggan as a black man gunned down, there is not the urgency brought on by an overflow of compromises, deaths, and tempers specific to a profile woke to and gone to sleep to each day. Arguably, there is no simultaneity between the English sky and the body being ordered to rest in peace. This difference, which has to do with the war the black body's presence has occasioned, to quote Baldwin, makes all the difference. One could become acquainted with the inflammation that existed around Duggan's body, and it would be uncomfortable. Grief comes out of relationships to subjects over time, and not to any subject in theory, you tell the English sky, to give him an out. The distance between you and him is thrown into relief, bodies moving through the same life differently. With your eyes wide open, you consider what this man and you, two middle-aged artists, in a house worth more than £1 million, share with Duggan. Mark Duggan, you are part of the misery. Apparently, your new friend won't write about Mark Duggan or the London riots. Still, you continue searching his face because there is something to find, an answer to question. October 10th, 2006. World Cup. Script for situation video created in collaboration with John Lucas. Something is there before us that is neither the living person himself nor any sort of reality, neither the same as the one who is alive nor another. What is there is the absolute calm of what has found its place. Maurice Blanchot. Every day I think about where I came from, and I am still proud to be who I am. Zinedine Zidane. Big Algerian shit, dirty terrorist, nigger. Accounts of lip readers responding to the transcript of the World Cup. Perhaps the most insidious and least understood form of segregation is that of the word. Ralph Ellison. The Algerian men, for their part, are a target of criticism for their European comrades. Arise directly to the level of tragedy. Notice, too, illustrations of this kind of racial prejudice can be multiplied indefinitely. Clearly the Algerians, who, in view of the intensity of the repression and the frenzied character of the oppression, thought they could answer the blows received without any serious problem of conscience. Frantz Fanon. And there is no black who has not felt, briefly or for long periods, with anguish sharp or dull, in varying degrees and to varying effect, simple, naked, and unanswerable hatred. Who is not wanted to smash any white face he may encounter in a day, to violate out of the motives of the cruelest vengeance, to break the bodies of all white people and bring them low as the dust into which he himself has been and is being trampled. No black who has not had to make his own precarious adjustment. Yet the adjustment must be made. Rather, it must be attempted. James Baldwin.
Do you think 2 minutes from the end of a World Cup final, 2 minutes from the end of my career, I wanted to do that?
Zinedine Zidane. Each decision gave rise to the same hesitations, produced the same despair. No one is free. For all that he is, people will say he remains for us an Arab. You can't get away from nature. Frantz Fanon.
Big Algerian shit. Dirty terrorist.
Accounts of lip readers responding to the transcript of the World Cup. Let him do his spite. My services, which I have done, shall out-tongue his complaints. William Shakespeare. When such things happen, he must grit his teeth, walk away a few steps, elude the passer-by who draws attention to him, who gives other passers-by the desire either to follow the example or to come to his defense. Frantz Fanon.
Big Algerian shit, dirty terrorist, nigger.
Accounts of lip readers responding to the transcript of the World Cup. That man who is forced each day to snatch his manhood, his identity, out of the fire of human cruelty that rages to destroy it, knows something about himself and human life that no school on earth, and indeed no church, can teach. He achieves his own authority, and that is unshakable. This is because, in order to save his life, he is forced to look beneath appearances, to take nothing for granted, to hear the meaning behind the words. We hear, then we remember. James Baldwin. The state of emergency is also always a state of emergence. Homi Baba. But at this moment, from whence came the spirit I don't know, I resolved to fight, and suiting my action to the resolution. Frederick Douglass. What we have here is not the bringing to light of a character known and frequented 1,000 times in the imagination or in stories. It is the white man who creates the black man, but it is the black man who creates. Frantz Fanon. This thing was there. We grasped it in the living motion. Maurice Blanchot.
What he said touched the deepest part of me.
Zinedine Zidane. The rebuttal assumes an original form. This endless struggle to achieve and reveal and confirm a human identity, human authority, contains, for all its horror, something very beautiful. James Baldwin. July 29th through August 18th, 2014. Making Room. Script for Public Fiction at Hammer Museum. On the train, the woman standing makes you understand there are no seats available. And, in fact, there is one. Is the woman getting off at the next stop? No, she would rather stand all the way to Union Station. The space next to the man is the pause in a conversation you are suddenly rushing to fill. You step quickly over the woman's fear, a fear she shares. You let her have it. The man doesn't acknowledge you as you sit down, because the man knows more about the unoccupied seat than you do. For him, you imagine, it is more like breath than wonder. He has had to think about it so much he wouldn't call it thought. When another passenger leaves his seat and the standing woman sits, you glance over at the man. He is gazing out the window into what looks like darkness. You sit next to the man on the train, bus, in the plane, waiting room, anywhere he could be forsaken. You put your body there in proximity to, adjacent to, alongside, within. You don't speak unless you are spoken to, and your body speaks to the space you fill, and you keep trying to fill it, Except the space belongs to the body of the man next to you, not to you. Where he goes, the space follows him. If the man left his seat before Union Station, you would simply be a person in a seat on the train. You would cease to struggle against the unoccupied seat when, where, why the space won't lose its meaning. You imagine if the man spoke to you, he would say, "It's okay. I'm okay. You don't need to sit here. You don't need to sit." And you sit and look past him into the darkness the train is moving through. A tunnel. All the while, the darkness allows you to look at him. Does he feel you looking at him? You suspect so. What does suspicion mean? What does suspicion do? The soft gray-green of your cotton coat touches the sleeve of him. You are shoulder to shoulder, though standing you could feel shadowed. You sit to repair whom? Who? You erase that thought, and it might be too late for that. It might forever be too late or too early. The train moves too fast for your eyes to adjust to anything beyond the man, the window, the tiled tunnel, its slick darkness. Occasionally, a white light flickers by, like a displaced sound. From across the aisle, tracks, room, harbor, world, a woman asks a man in the rows ahead if he would mind switching seats. She wishes to sit with her daughter or son. You hear, but you don't hear. You can't see. It's then the man next to you turns to you, and as if from inside your own head, you agree that if anyone asks you to move, you'll tell them, "We are traveling as a family." In memory of Jordan Russell Davis. In memory of Eric Garner. In memory of John Crawford. In memory of Michael Brown. In memory, in memory, in memory, in memory, in memory. Because white men can't police their imagination, black men are dying. 7. Some years, there exists a wanting to escape. You, floating above your certain ache, still the ache coexists. Call that the imminent you. You are you even before you grow into understanding you are not anyone, worthless, not worth you. Even as your own weight insists you are here, fighting off the weight of non-existence. And still this life parts your lids. You see you seeing your extending hand as a falling wave. I, they, he, she, we, you turn, only to discover the encounter to be alien to this place. Wait. The patience is in the living. Time opens out to you. The opening, between you and you, occupied, zoned for an encounter, given the histories of you and you, and always, who is this you? The start of you each day a presence already. Hey, you. Slipping down, burying the you buried within, you are everywhere and you are nowhere in the day. The outside comes in, then you, hey, you, overheard in the moonlight, overcome in the moonlight. Soon you are sitting around, publicly listening, when you hear this. What happens to you doesn't belong to you, only half concerns you. He is speaking of the Legionnaires in Claire Denis' film Beau Travail, and you are pulled back into the body of you receiving the nothing gaze. The world out there insisting on this only half concerns you. What happens to you doesn't belong to you, only half concerns you. It's not yours. Not yours only. And still, a world begins its furious erasure. Who do you think you are, saying I to me? You nothing, you nobody, you. A body in the world drowns in it. Hey, you. All our fevered history won't instill insight, won't turn a body conscious, won't make that look in the eye say yes, though there is nothing to solve, even as each moment is an answer. Don't say I if it means so little, holds the little forming no one. You are not sick, you are injured. You ache for the rest of life. How to care for the injured body. The kind of body that can't hold the content it is living. And where is the safest place when that place must be someplace other than in the body? Even now your voice entangles this mouth whose words are here as pulse, strumming shut out, shut in, shut up. You cannot say. A body translates its you. You there. Hey you. Even as it loses the location of its mouth. When you lay your body in the body entered as if skin and bone were public places, when you lay your body in the body entered as if you're the ground you walk on, you know no memory should live in these memories, becoming the body of you. You slow all existence down with your call, detectable only as sky. The night's yawn absorbs you as you lie down at the wrong angle to the sun, ready already to let go of your hand. Wait with me. Though the waiting, wait up, might take until nothing whatsoever was done. To be left not alone, the only wish. To call you out, to call out you. Who shouted you? You shouted you. You, the murmur in the air, you sometimes sounding like you, you sometimes saying you. Go nowhere, be no one, but you first. Nobody notices. Only you've known. You're not sick, not crazy, not angry, not sad. It's just this. You're injured. Everything shaded, everything darkened, everything shadowed, is the stripped, is the struck, is the trace, is the aftertaste. I, they, he, she, we, you were too concluded yesterday to know whatever was done could also be done, was also done, was never done. The worst injury is feeling you don't belong so much to you. When the waitress hands your friend the card she took from you, you laugh and ask what else her privilege gets her. Oh, my perfect life, she answers. Then you both are laughing so hard, everyone in the restaurant smiles. Closed to traffic, the previously unexpressive street fills with small bodies. One father, having let go of his child's hand, stands on the steps of a building and watches. You can't tell which child is his, though you follow his gaze. It seems to belong to all the children as it envelops their play. You are about to enter your building, but do not want to leave the scope of his vigilance. July 13th, 2013. A friend writes of the numbing effects of humming, and it returns you to your own sigh. It's no longer audible. You've grown into it. Some call it aging, an internalized liquid smoke blurring ordinary ache. Just this morning, another, what did he say? Come on, get back in the car. Your partner wants to face off with a mouth, and who knows what handheld objects the other vehicle carries. Trayvon Martin's name sounds from the car radio a dozen times each half hour. You pull your love back into the seat because, though no one seems to be chasing you, the justice system has other plans. Yes, and this is how you are a citizen. Come on, let it go. Move on. Despite the air conditioning, you pull the button back and the window slides down into its door sleeve. A breeze touches your cheek. As something should. What feels more than feeling? You are afraid there is something you are missing, something obvious. A feeling that feelings might be irrelevant if they point to one's irrelevance pulls at you. Do feelings lose their feeling if they speak to a lack of feeling? Can feelings be a hazard, a warning sign, a disturbance, distaste, the disgrace? Don't feel like you are mistaken. It's not that. Is it not that you are oversensitive or misunderstanding? You know feelings destabilize, since everyone you ask is laughing that kind of close-the-gap laughter. All the ha-has wanting uninterrupted views. Don't be ridiculous. None of the other black friends feel that way, and how you feel is how you feel, even if what you perceive isn't tied to what is. What is. And so it goes until the vista includes only displacement of feeling back into the body, which gave birth to the feelings that don't sit comfortably inside the communal. You smile dumbly at the world, because you are still feeling, if only the feeling could be known, and this brings on the moment you recognize as desire. Every day your mouth opens and receives the kiss the world offers, which seals you shut, though you are feeling sick to your stomach about the beginning of the feeling that was born from understanding and now stumbles around in you, the go-along-to-get-along tongue pushing your tongue aside. Yes, and your mouth is full up, and the feeling is still tottering. The subject of so many films is the protection of the victim, and I think, I don't give a damn about those things. It's not the job of films to nurse people. With what's happening in the chemistry of love, I don't want to be a nurse or a doctor. I just want to be an observer. As a child, Claire Denis wished to be a nurse. She is no longer a child. Years have passed, and so soon we love this world. So soon we are willing to coexist with dust in our eyes. And of course, you want the days to add up to something more than you came in out of the sun and drank the potable water of your developed world. Yes, and because words hang in the air like pollen, the throat closes. You hack away. That time and that time and that time the outside blistered the inside of you, words outmaneuvered years, had you in a chokehold, every part roughed up, the eyes dripping. That's the bruise the ice in the heart was meant to ice. To arrive like this every day, for it to be like this, to have so many memories, and no other memory than these, for as long as they can be remembered to remember this. Though a share of all remembering, a measure of all memory is breath, and to breathe you have to create a truce with the patience of a stethoscope. I can hear the even breathing that creates passages to dreams. And yes, I want to interrupt to tell him, her, us, you, me, I don't know how to end what doesn't have an ending. Tell me a story, he says, wrapping his arms around me. Yesterday, I begin, I was waiting in the car for time to pass. A woman pulled in and started to park her car facing mine. Our eyes met, and what passed, passed as quickly as the look away. She backed up and parked on the other side of the lot. I could have followed her to worry my question, but I had to go. I was expected on court. I grabbed my racket. The sunrise is slow and cloudy, dragging the light in, but barely.
Did you win?
He asks. It wasn't a match, I say. It was a lesson. This concludes Citizen by Claudia Rankine. Narrated by Allison Johnson. Copyright 2014 by Claudia Rankine. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Grey Wolf Press and was produced in the year 2015 by Tantor Media, Incorporated, which holds the copyright there too. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage of special offers. Or call toll-free 877-7-T-A-N-T-O-R to request a catalog.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.